On this episode of the Reflex Blue Show, Diana Valentine and I talk to Jim Woods of United Pet Group.
I'm a navel gazer. I love it.
Welcome, everybody, back to the Reflex Blue Show. I'm your host, Donovan Beery, and I have co-host Diana Valentine is back.
What's up?
We are still in San Francisco at the Moscone West Conference Center with How Design Live. And we have with us, fresh off the speaking stage, Jim Woods from, is it United Pet Group? Is
that right? United Pet Group. Very happy to be here.
All right.
How do you feel?
Exhausted.
Yeah? Did you leave it all on stage?
Yeah. It's the tension's gone. Everything's done. And I can finally relax. I was talking to Donovan on the way up here that, you know, I would hate to be like the last speaker of the conference because just having to deal with that all week, I just don't think I'd be able to enjoy the conference. I just couldn't handle it. So now I can sit back, relax, enjoy the conference, wander, talk to people, and then not have to worry about, well, I have an extra hour. Should I go rehearse? You know, and
I have noticed that like whoever they bring in normally for these keynotes that come in, they just speak at the final thing. It's like they fly in that morning, and now I'm starting to realize why. But it's like, yeah you don't. Skip the whole conference because you ain't going to enjoy it.
Well, my wife hasn't seen me for the last month because I get home, I put the kids down, I go up to the bedroom, shut the door, and I rehearsed every day for like once or twice. And you're up there for like an hour and 15 minutes. So, you know, one rehearsing session pretty much eats up the rest of my evening. So I've been sort of the husband that you used to know type thing.
Well, did it pay off?
Was it a good investment?
I didn't embarrass myself, you know, so that's always good. And my employees didn't leave. I didn't have a mass exodus. That's always my big fear.
Right.
You know, you've seen some conferences where, you know, some of the speakers and you feel really bad for them because everybody gets up and
just
leaves.
Just pours out.
And you're like, that's my
Maybe that's what
fear.
They were going for.
Yeah, maybe. But, you know, but luckily.
Maybe they rehearsed that.
Yeah. But yeah. I think I sort of have a trapped audience too because I was in the in-house section. So, you know, a lot of those people can only go to the in-house. So I get lucky that they don't have anywhere else to go.
What was your talk about?
My talk was on pushing back and saying no. So it was entitled The Art of Saying No. And you probably don't know this, but you're the way that this topic came to happen.
And he's pointing to Diana,
yes,
not to me.
Diana,
so,
yes.
Because I've never met this guy.
Oh, yes, they knew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a given. If any, you know.
Tell me how that happened. I'm so happy to be part of it.
Right. So years and years ago, I was at one of your sessions in the morning. It was a breakfast session. You had us write on the back of our name tags one thing we were good at. I wrote on the back of mine that I was good at saying no. And the response that I got throughout the conference was unbelievable. And for some reason, and I don't know if you plan this, if it's some ulterior motive, if you have godlike powers, but your name tags always go backwards at this conference, right? They never go face forward. It's always backwards. Whenever you look at people, their name tags are always backwards. So my goal in life is to invent some way that your name tag always stays forward and make millions of dollars. And yes, that's it.
Diana is pulling out right now the sticker that says, "Hello, I'm really good at."
Yes.
And then it's got the icon that frequent guest
Steve
Gordon
yeah.
did. And then it's got her, you know, DianaValentine.com. And so, you write on it. It's like a name tag, but
right.
you write what you're good at.
Yeah.
And so I did that. I got a tremendous response. And I was like, you know, I could probably do a whole session on this because literally the marketing team years and years ago at a team building exercise, they gave everybody awards. Right? Everybody in the team got an award, creative and marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And my award was literally on the nice, fancy Avery label on my Chinese plastic trophy. It said, "No, awarded to Jim Woods." So the very people who I'm saying no to, pushing back on, actually gave me an award for saying no because they just felt like that was what I did.
And they could see the value of it.
Right. So,
You're an award-winning no-king.
Yes, absolutely.
So when Hal came to you about this, how many times did you say no? Before you actually did
you don't tell. It, Hal's like my wife. You know,
okay.
I don't say no, you know,
okay.
to Hal or my wife. You know, I know better. There's lines you just don't cross.
Yes, honey.
Yes, yes. Whatever you like. So, yeah, I don't go across that boundary.
So what is this power of saying no?
It's not so much saying no as much as it is pushing back, right? Really diving in and understanding what the true need is. And I work with marketing and salespeople, and they are all about asking for everything. It's just part of their DNA. It's what they do day in, day out. Because if they ask for everything and you give it to them, their life is 1,000 times easier. You know, their presentations go better. You know, they sell stuff better. They're just going to ask for that. It's part of it. But, you know, we're not staffed to give them everything they need. I'm staffed to give them, or everything they want, I'm staffed to be able to give them what they need and to really, you know, I got to make sure everyone is treated fairly. Everyone's receiving what they need. And if I start focusing on individuals and giving them everything they ask for, then someone else is getting forgotten. So it's really pushing back, saying no, and figuring out what the true priorities are and focusing on those and then trying to over-deliver on those and demonstrating that by doing the things that don't matter or that are low priority, it's allowed you to do that.
So it sounds like saying no in this context is a way to a better yes.
Exactly. And when, and that was the sort of the end of the presentation was you need to say yes as much as possible. You know, and the award, as much as I was proud of that award, and, you know, I'd sat predominantly on my desk for many, many months, it really started, I'd sit there and stare at it, and it really started bothering me because I felt like no became the default answer, right?
Right.
They're not hearing the yeses. Right? They don't know. They're not paying attention to what I'm doing for them. They're just thinking my automatic response is going to be no. I'm just going to shut them down right away. And that's not really what I wanted to happen. I just don't want the stupid stuff laying on my desk. Don't come to me with projects you know I shouldn't be working on. Mm-hmm. And if you do, expect me to push back on those and expect me to minimize what you're asking for there. So it really kind of, as much as I liked the award, I ended up even throwing it away because it just bothered me, and I just couldn't, and I was like, I need them to focus on the yeses. I want them to focus on what I can do for them so they come to me with legitimate things that I can help them with and then I can over deliver and exceed their expectations.
But it's also like a community alignment tool to get everybody understanding what really are the great things to ask for so we all keep moving forward.
Right. And it was one of those things, too, where I might have taken it to the extreme, right? You know, I might have had to go to a very drastic side of it in order to get my point across.
Yeah.
And that probably is what spawned that and the fact that this is the default answer. Jim's just going to say no, you know. And I really wanted to get away from that. So it's kind of both sides of saying no and saying yes. And where is it appropriate?
Good boundaries are always appropriate.
Yes.
Wonderful. We're going to take a break. We're going to be right back, and we're going to talk about United Pet Group. All right, Jim, you're at United Pet Group. What does United Pet Group do?
Okay, so United Pet Group is split into two divisions. You have the side that I'm on, which is what we call aquatics, which is fish, pond, reptile. We pretty much sell everything but the fish in the water. We've actually considered selling the water once because people do sell beta water, and we've really considered it. And then there's companion animal, which is dog, cat, bird, small animal, and stuff like that. And both divisions are here at the conference representing. And you know, we talk, we have collaboration and stuff like that, even though we're in separate facilities and stuff, which is nice. So I'm focused on the aquatic side, reptile, aquariums, ponds. That's my gig.
How big is the team that works with you?
There's 8 of us total, including myself. And it's a split of contract employees and full-time employees because, obviously, like a lot of other companies, money's tight, headcounts are crucial, and it's really hard to get physical headcount. So, contract workers have been really helpful for us. I actually started as the company as a contract employee when I started and sort of worked my way up. And it's a great way to sort of get really young talent, because there's no benefits, right?
To be in a contract position,
there's no benefits. So it's a great way to get people right out of school because they can still, piggyback on their parents' benefits and stuff and get some really young talent, some new ideas, bring them in, introduce them to the team. And as positions open up, we can boost them in. So when I get somebody into a full-time position, they're like ready to go. They're just trained. And it's full steam ahead, which has been great. So a little bit of mix of both, 8 of us total on the creative team.
What are the challenges you guys face when dealing with, with everything but water that you sell for aquatic animals?
One, it's one thing that's very obvious at this conference is, I walk around and I see, some of these great stock photo booths, and I can't use any of it, because it's like there's no good fish photography. There's ocean photography, but there's no good fish photography. There's no shortcuts for me when it comes to those types of things.
Let's just do a Reflex Blue shout out. We need some aquatic photographers to show up.
Yeah. So, you know,
hook up with one of the stock companies and help
post
help,
in
help
the comments.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I've got to set everything up. So when I do a photo shoot, and one of the things I talked about, you know, it's key is knowledge, right? I need to know fish, right? I need to know it. I need to be able to, and I need to know the products and I need to know everything about it. Because if I got a week long photo shoot, I got to keep those fish alive. I got to keep the tanks clear. I got to keep, you know, no bubbles. I need to literally have the fish in the right spots. You know, it's not
it's
the easiest
fashion.
Thing.
It's not, I mean, you have to line up. I'm just trying to picture, like, do you, like, position the fish over? Like, hey, can you move
like,
over, like, another
tree,
half inch?
Here's a tree.
Well, certain fish respond to that. Seriously.
Okay. Really?
Like, I will take clear straws, and some fish you can just sit there and move them, you know, some of the straw, and it doesn't stress them out. They don't drop their color, and they will move. Other ones, you just have to let them go.
Wait, drop their color?
They stress out. They drop their color, right? So they don't look good. So you can't stress the fish out in the shoot.
It's like the equivalent of hair and makeup, I guess.
Yes.
Poor fishies.
Yes. So, you know, it's all very delicate. So, you know, the fish come in. I order them from the distributors. We try to use our connections in marketing to get us, like, full-grown, really nice fish. Because you go to the stores, you're getting babies, you know. And we're paying through the nose for these really nice fish. But it makes such a big difference. And then you just don't want it to look Photoshopped, you know. And that's one thing I think we have over our competitors is you look at our tanks, you can't tell that none of those fish were in the original shot there, right? So, like, we'll shoot and we'll take 50 shots while the fish are going back and forth. And now those 50 shots, we go, we want that fish, we want this fish, we want this fish, you know, and pick them out. And it's a lot of work and it's a lot of time and a lot of credit to my photographer and some of my guys who are really good at photo editing and being able to do that. And then we can sub it in. It doesn't look Photoshopped. It looks completely natural, but it's very time consuming, you know. And getting one tank shot could take me half a day. You know, and that's if everything goes right. You know, I was in one shoot once, we did a saltwater tank, and everything started dying on us, right? And we couldn't control it. It was just crashing. And we literally had to break the tank down, empty everything out, clean it all out, reset it up within like 3 hours, and have a whole nother setup in there. And it's like, you just can't predict it. I mean, these are live animals, and you're doing your best to keep them alive and make sure they're happy, but it's just unpredictable because they're getting stressed out. And, you know, it's tough.
My heart is breaking for the fish. Do you have, like, an adoption process for after the shoots?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah, all the fish have homes.
Oh.
Yes. And it's, you know, and we highly encourage the people in the office to have tanks, right? You know, we want them to also be passionate about the hobby. And that's one great thing about this company, and specifically about the fish side, is that people are passionate about the fish. Some of our marketing people were like marine biology majors and stuff.
Really?
This is what they've been doing. A lot of them started out as kids working in pet stores.
Fascinating.
You know, so this is their passion. They are truly entrenched in this hobby. And having that kind of passion behind the marketing just makes it so much. Sometimes it's easier. Sometimes it's harder because you're trying to argue something.
If you're going to the effort of, like, moving fish around a tank by guiding them with straws and stuff, I think you have to have some sort of passion in wanting to do that, I assume.
Yeah.
Or you'd just be like, fish looks fine, take the photo.
Right, exactly. So, and it's kind of the retentive side of me that's just like, no, I need to fill that hole. You know, the plant's not laying the way I want it, so I need to put a fish there, you know, and, like, I need to get him over there, and I'll spend the next hour and a half trying to get that fish over there. And I'm sure sometimes the photographers just want to beat me with the tripods, but, you know, it's in the end, it looks great, and we get some really cool shots from them.
What's the toughest fish to photograph that you guys have dealt with? And what's the easiest? I mean,
the easiest is pretty much the cichlids because, again, it takes a lot to stress them out. They don't really drop their colors very easily, and that's tough. When they get stressed out and there's no color, it's just you don't look at that, you know, because that package is the touch point, right? That's that's what's guiding that purchase. And we found that a lot of people, when they buy the tank, they buy what's in it. So the way I decorate it is the products that they're buying on the shelf.
So they'll just say, I want this whole package.
Right. You know, they're sold about the whole thing. Because people don't buy a fish tank because they think they like the tank. They buy a fish tank because they like the fish.
Most fish tanks are just kind of clear. I mean, it's just a clear rectangle.
Yes.
But they have the cool backgrounds, and there's like, you got to have a treasure chest. I mean, it's sort of key.
Number one, you know, they sell over 1 million no fishing signs a year. The little ceramic, the fishing signs. Yeah, one of our sales guys told me that they sell over 1 million of those things a year. It just blew my mind. But yeah, so, but it's, you can personalize it, right? And one of our new things we have is glowfish with their fluorescent fish, and we're the, you know,
with the black light in the tank or something.
Well, it's not a black light. It's just a blue, and it's like a certain frequency to that blue light that makes them fluoresce. They don't technically glow; they fluoresce, right? And it's very cool. And kids really get into it. People just add them to their tank because they're just so colorful and it's just so different. It's probably the biggest thing that's happened for our industry in a while, as far as bringing interest in something new and different. So. They're really easy to shoot, too, because they don't drop that color. They're just that color. The fast fish, those are the ones that are a pain, you know.
So, oh, right, because yeah, they don't just hover.
They're moving so quick,
right.
And you need such a great depth of field because you want everything in the tank to be clear. So when you want that depth of field, it's hard to do the faster shutter
and
speed.
Light it,
you know,
right.
You know, so then you're dealing with the quickness of the fish versus the depth of field, and it can be a real pain, so.
So is there any way to slow the fish down? Do you, like, not feed them for a while?
Little quaaludes in the water or something?
They have those.
Really?
Yes, they have fish calming pills.
Fish downer.
I mean, they got, like, Prozac for
dogs. I need
some
fish calming.
Of course they got.
So you can add that into the water, and it's supposed to calm the fish. And a lot of times when they ship the fish out, they put that type of stuff in.
So it doesn't stress them out.
Just to stress them out and calm them down so there's less fish loss and they don't have as many die. But I typically don't use that because... It usually doesn't affect the fish you want it to affect, and it does, you know, so it's...
And you don't want your fish to have that blurry eye, that hazy...
Yeah, you know, it's,
Dude,
you know...
Dude,
yeah.
I am so stoned right now.
Yeah, I don't want to be known as a pusher, you know, as a dealer for the fish community.
Getting
so,
the fish all strung out.
Yeah, keep away from that.
Tricking them out in your advertising.
Absolutely, you know, you never know, PETA, you know, you don't want to make them angry, so I do...
Are the lizards easier to deal with?
They are because I don't handle them. I'm not a lizard fan. I'm not big on the reptiles. I always get somebody else to handle those. But again, it's like you've got people that are super passionate. We did a shoot one time with some salamanders and newts, and we invited a guy in who was like this known breeder of salamanders and newts, you know. You don't really know what to expect when he brought him in, and we promised we'd do some individual shots.
Yeah,
and
when he says he's
products.
A known breeder of salamanders and newts, you don't know what to expect.
Right.
But there's shows
around the country that these people go and buy and sell their livestock.
The newt whisperers.
Right, and this guy's like 6'5", you know, 250, just big, burly guy. Here he is just babying these little salamanders and newts. It's the craziest thing.
That's the shoot I would want to see.
You know? And it's like, but you know, and he's super happy to get his stuff on because he can say, that's my animal, you know, on the front of this nationwide package. And then we gave him some product as a thank you and took some individual shots for him so he can put them up on his website because he sells them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's got these really high-end professional shots versus him doing it in his living room with a point-and-shoot type thing. So we try to leverage that as much as we can. We have people, especially on the reptile side, because it's not as easy to find homes. So you try to find them where they're existing. Or sometimes we work with pet stores and get them, and then we can return them after the shoot, where we'll pay for the animal and then return it, and they can sell it again type thing, or just try to partner with them in one way or another so that, again, to try to find homes. Make sure that they're cared for and all that kind of good stuff. So
it sounds like a lot of like logistics because you're renting newts, I guess.
Yes,
but it's running on aquatic the national fever of aquatic passion. You know, it's like it sounds like just even within your organization, and then to the support organizations and suppliers and the people who are enthusiasts. This is like not for the half-hearted hobbyist.
Exactly, and for us, I mean, we're national brands. Right, and when you think about national brands, when you get into that,
what are the main brands that you know?
Okay, so we have Tetra. Well, for aquatic, you have Tetra, which is the big one. That's everybody knows Tetra fish food. Everybody knows that yellow can with the brown lid, right? And that's sort of the 800-pound gorilla. And then we have Marineland, Instant Ocean, which is salt primarily, and we also do water care and stuff. And then Jungle and Aquatech, which is a store control brand, and then we also provide a lot of stuff for private label, but those are the main brands that we deal with. So being a national brand, you know, sometimes, especially in the hobbyist community, you can get a bad name. You know, when you're in Walmart, when you're in PetSmart, when you're in Petco, you know, you sort of devalue yourself to a lot of people because They just want you an independence.
Interesting.
Right? You know? And you're just seen as a commodity, you know, and you're just making it cheap. It's
kind of
China.
Selling out.
Right, exactly. So it's really tough. So when you can get that support from the breeders, you know, to come in and help you out, and then they're proud of it, right? And then they're going to help reinforce it. And you show them the product. Get them excited about it, you know. Show them what, you know, our marketing guys put a tremendous amount of effort into these things, you know. And same with our R&D department. They're putting, again, they're just so tied to it, and they're putting so much energy into it. I think it really does hurt them when you've got the hobbyist going, no, you know, I can make something in my garage better type thing, you
right.
know, because they really are trying to address the need and make sure it works and it's functional and does what it needs to do. So
that's fascinating. We're going to be right back.
So, is this what you thought your life would look like? I haven't talked about fish, aquatics, aquarium. I haven't talked about this.
Diana doesn't
since
even
I was
plants.
A little kid.
We talked about that last time.
I have no animals,
show.
No plants.
Okay. Well, I'm the exact opposite.
Okay.
So I'm a 4-H kid. Started 4-H. I had my first rabbit when I was 5.
Mm-hmm.
At my peak, I had around 130. Right. I was
wow.
huge. I was the rabbit geek, right? We're just talking about, you know, some of the reptile people. I was the crazy rabbit kid, right? And I had those. I had dairy goats, so uh-huh. I milked goats. We raised chickens. We did capons, which were like a meat chicken.
Delicious.
And we do like 50, 100 at a time and then just butcher them all. It was like family occasion. Grandparents came down. So that was
sounds like
background.
A family event to me.
Yeah. You know, and it was just, and my brother and I hated it. I mean, it was awful, but it was just part of this is what we did. This
right.
is our family. This is how we do it. So we've always been around animals.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that I was particularly looking to get into a field that was dealing with animals. It just sort of happened, you know, and right out of school, I worked with Clear Channel and was doing advertising for them for the Baltimore and D.C. market, which had nothing to do with animals. But I just was – it was right at the dot-com bust. I just needed a job. You know, I was working at Denny's as a cook all through college, and I'm like, I can't be a lifer. You know, I got to go
yeah.
and do something with this degree. And then this presented itself, and it just became a very natural fit. And I think that's what sort of helped me move as quickly and as well as I have within the corporation. Because I do have a lot of knowledge and a lot of passion with animals, and it just sort of happened. So didn't really plan it; it just sort of happened, and I've been pretty pleased with it so far. And pet industry is just a great industry, you know, and it's been one of those things where it's treated me really well, and I've been pretty happy to be in it. So
nice. Man living his passion.
Now, do you still have bunnies, or are you all
nope.
fish now?
No, I have a dog. I have a cat.
What kind of dog?
It is a pure mutt, because I have come to the conclusion
nice.
That mutts cost you far less money. You know, being sort of the farm background, right?
Right.
I'm not the, you know, it is part of the family. It has to be inside. You know, that's not me. You know,
right.
it's when I grew up, if it's a $400 pet bill, well, that's been a great dog.
Right.
I haven't put down, you know, and that was kind of how
that is,
I grew
that
up.
Is the farmer mentality.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like, you know, they're there for a purpose. Like
right.
our animals were never allowed in our home.
And if they can't do their job.
Right. So, you know, now I've got the dog, I've got the cat, and they're more a member of our family than they were growing up, you know, and the dog's
mm-hmm.
inside, but you know, the dog's outside as much as humanly possible. The cat's outside as much as humanly possible. And let them do what they want to do. You know, it's like, you know, well, she's limping. Should we take her to the vet? Let it go a week or two. It'll work its way out, you
yeah.
know, and it does.
She
and,
can still run
and
climb.
And I found that, you know, mutts don't have as many issues. It's like everybody know with purebred animals. It's like,
yeah.
you know, and genetic issues and stuff like that. So, yeah, purebred mutt. The cat was an adoptee. There's so many free animals out there that need homes. Why am I paying for one? You know,
right.
there's just... You know, why would I do that?
Sure.
You know, so yeah, so I'm all about the mutts. No rabbits, but when I left home, I left all the stuff. So 130 rabbits takes up a lot of spots. So I had a very large pole building with cages and everything, and they're all still there. So my mom actually now has rabbits. She started up again, and she uses them as business. She goes around to nursing homes. and uses them as
like things. Service animals, right, support animals.
Right, and it's nice because they're clean, and they can sit in their laps if they go to the bathroom. You know, it's solid little pebbles. It's not hurting your, or they're very clean. And in a nursing home environment, that's very important. And they're very therapeutic. So, you know, being able to hold it in their lap and just sit there and touch it and pet it. So she's sort of made a little business out of that and doing that. So rabbits still somewhat in my life. I'm sure once my children are a little bit older, they'll start asking and I'll have to cave and get them rabbits.
Are you going to get them involved in 4-H?
I would like to. The 4-H program down where I live now is not quite as robust as where I was, so it's a little more difficult. And I've gone and actually, and I've talked to them, and they're like, "Well, you can start a club." And I'm going, "God, I know that's a lot of work." So, you know, it's I'd like for them. I learned a lot, and that's where I started speaking. You know, as my mom very early put me into competitive public speaking through 4-H, and then it went beyond that into other things where you can win like scholarships and stuff like that. So, I want to say I was like 9 or 10 when I started competitive public speaking. Somewhere in there, really far back. And so it's always been something I've done, which makes doing this a lot easier and very gratifying. You know, as far as where I thought I'd be, this is where I never thought I'd be. You know, I never expected myself to be up here speaking and at Howl. And, you know, it's such a big deal. Like, I'm surrounded by people that just dwarf my career. You know, people that I've looked up to, people that their work is just astounding. And to be and mixed with that
is just
a huge honor, you know. Like, nobody knows who United Pet Group is, you know, and
they will now.
They hopefully
will. Well, they
will
know
now.
Tetra. That's the thing. They know,
Tetra, right? Yeah. You know, and it's one of those things where, you know, the first session 2 years ago that I did, it was they did a lunch with the speaker, and I was like mortified. I was like, "Who's going to have lunch with me? This is like $45. Nobody knows who I am." You know, I'm not all over Howl Print or any of that kind of stuff. No one really knows who our company is. And I was just like, oh, God, I'm going to sit at this table
by myself
and feel like a complete and utter tool, you know. And luckily, I think I had 3 or 4 people signed up. So it was a great boost to the ego, absolutely. And so this has been, honestly, the thing. I've been with the company for 12 years. So when you've been with a company that long, you're always looking for ways to sort of boost yourself. Usually if you try to boost your career, you job hop, right? You move on to other things, and I like where I'm at. So for me, that's not really an option. So what else can I do to sort of, you know, boost myself, you know, make sure my resume is not getting stale, make sure I'm doing things
well,
to progress.
Well, you also
want to
make sure that you're not getting stale in your design as well.
Absolutely.
You're continually like moving forward. That's why I do this.
It's absolutely like the 4-H of your profession. You got to keep learning, add new skills, sharpen the saw, you know.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And this gives me great notoriety within the company. You know, they see it as a huge value add because it gets our name. It's easier to possibly recruit people down the road, you know, because they know who we are.
No, where are you guys located?
Blacksburg, Virginia. So kind of in the middle of nowhere. So it is difficult, you know, to find talent down there because there's not a lot. But we've got the 2 colleges, which is nice. So, again, with the contract thing and getting young people right out of school is great. So we can get some new talent, some fresh faces in there. And it works well. So coming from Baltimore down to Blacksburg was a big difference. You know?
Cultural shift.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So,
okay. Well, Jim, we thank you for being on the show. Diana, thanks again for being a wonderful co-host with us.
It's been a pleasure.
And we'll be back in a week.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Reflex Blue Show. For more information, visit 36point.com. The Reflex Blue Show was created by Donovan Beery and Nate Voss. Music by Ben Luders.
Yeah, we're just going to see if the mic's working right, if you just want to say anything whatsoever.
I don't have a hangover.
That's a lie.
I don't have a hangover.
I don't.
I definitely don't.
Yeah, I haven't drank for the last 2 days.
But your talk's over, so you'd be drinking.
Oh, tonight's all out.
That's going in the B-roll.
Yeah.